Hello, everybody, and welcome to Galactic Yo-Yo. I'm your host, Molly Martian. These podcasts are just getting later and later, aren't they? Forgive me, I'm just rushing through my office. Pardon me. Okay, I'm out of the office. This week on the podcast, I'm sharing a conversation I had with my good friend Harrison Brocklehurst. Now, when I was editing the podcast, I obviously listened back to it all, and I kind of noticed that we don't give anywhere near enough context for the early parts of the conversation, so I'm going to do some explaining now. Basically, Harrison and I met when we were kids doing Amdram together, and we were involved with this local theatre group called NK Theatre Arts, which was based at a theatre in Stockport called the Forum Theatre. And that's kind of what we're talking about when we talk at length about theatre in the first kind of, 15 minutes of the episode. So just to clear that up, it gets a little bit inside baseball at the start, but I hope you can forgive me. Then Harrison and I start talking about his experience growing up with Doctor Who, and then we get on to a passion of Harrison's and a more recent passion of mine too, which is Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And we talk about how Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Doctor Who are kind of firm friends in terms of the way they approach science fiction and fantasy and genre as a thing. I am recording another podcast in 2 days, and then I'm recording another one on Monday, so they're going to be coming at you thick and fast. I hope you're all having great weeks. Has everybody seen the rumors about Stephen writing the 2024 Christmas special? How thrilling. I mean, we all knew what he was like. We know Stephen, and we know that when he was interviewed about it like 6 months ago and he said, "I'd have to be mad to come back," we knew what he meant, which is, yes, I'm absolutely coming back. So I'm really thrilled by that, because you guys know that I love Stephen. Any other admin? No. I think that's everything. This has been a bit of a chaotic introduction. I'm going to buy a Ginster's vegan creamy mushroom pasty now and eat that for my lunch. But until next time, I hope you enjoy my conversation with Harrison Brocklehurst.
It seems that I'm some kind of a galactic yo.
You've not had any sleep at all.
No, I've not had any sleep at all.
That's awful.
It is awful.
I can hardly imagine it.
Yeah, it's a bit weird. I don't think I've I don't think I've really like come to the. I think when I sit on the train home later, I'll be like, right, that's what's happened.
Do you think you'll fall asleep?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't really want to though, because I'm not the last stop.
But you're still like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but the last stop is Manchester, so it wouldn't be that bad if you ended up in town.
True, but I just, I don't know. I like having my wits about me. I currently feel a bit witless.
I am forever falling asleep on the tube and waking up in the wrong place.
I nearly did on the way here.
Yeah.
I actually had
I am the last stop, so.
Yeah, true. I did like that about getting off here.
Who are you? Where have you been? Why are you here?
I'm Harrison Brocklehurst. I am a pop culture journalist with The Tab, and I am here because you are a very good friend of mine, and I've been wanting to come onto this for ages, so I'm glad that I finally get a chance to kind of come and chat about Doctor Who stuff with you.
Even though you hate podcasts.
I do hate podcasts. I would never listen to this if I wasn't on it, so
no offense to you. Why do you hate... Look, right, I'm going to ask you why you hate podcasts, and I know what the answer is going to be. Yeah. And it's funny because, so we kind of, our friendship is kind of based on music.
Mm.
We both like music a lot. And what you're going to say is that you would never choose to listen to a podcast over listening to music.
Yeah, that's
and,
true.
And I should feel like that. But I do feel like that a lot of the time. But sometimes, like, it, you know, if I'm in the gym, for example.
That's the place I'd want the music the most.
Really?
I need like... Upbeat. I have a specific playlist for the gym. I couldn't listen to anything that's not that playlist there. Then again, I'm a bit weird about stuff like that. So
yeah,
but I just like you said, I can't think of the time where I pick the podcast over music. I can't think of it.
Yeah, it's sort of, I find it hard to explain when I do, and it is rare. Sometimes I just don't want the racket, you know. Sometimes I just want someone, I want some company. That's what I want. It's like in...
I guess people say that about the radio as well.
Yeah. It's like in lockdown, right? When I was, for a little while, I lived by myself because my flatmates all went home. And I watched Gogglebox, like so much Gogglebox. So I just watched episode after episode because it felt like I was hanging out with people, like because it's so conversational and casual. Yeah. Maybe that's what I get from podcasts.
I get that. I think it's weird because I do like podcasts when I'm watching clips on YouTube. Or like if I'm watching a podcast, I like it. I kind of, in my head, I need a bit of visuals, I think.
Sure,
for any,
okay.
Like chats.
You like that guy and his dad, don't you?
I do like them, yeah. They're really good. I love it because I would love my dad to be as open-minded with music like that.
And as sexy as him.
Yeah, well, I don't want my dad to be as sexy. That would be weird. but like, I like watching them as a duo for sure, for sure.
I guess you watch like YouTube video essays a lot and stuff, don't you?
And I feel like the most of the podcast stuff I consume is like through, I guess, TikTok and just in like little snippets and stuff, which actually suits me fine.
Because you're a Gen Z with no attention span.
That's me, yeah. No, I think I have, I love my films. I've got a big attention span. I feel like when I listen to podcasts, I can't do anything else as well without it just washing over me. Whereas if music washes over me, it's kind of fine because it like soaks into me. But I don't want to miss the podcast stuff. And then I end up just sat there like listening intensely rather than just
on. Yeah. Do you ever listen to an album like that? Just like sit in the...
Sometimes
sit in your room and just listen.
I couldn't do it in like if there was lighting in the room though. Like I like to do it in like the dark.
Sure.
Headphones in, like looking at the roof kind of vibe.
Sure.
I did it with Ultraviolence the other day actually.
Ultraviolence, an early Lana Del Rey LP, right?
Early Lana Del Rey.
I don't like that stuff, really.
It's good.
To me, Lana Del Rey got good in 2019.
I think that's pretty valid. But like as a big fan, I have like a nostalgic love for that album for sure. And I think it's her best out of those early ones.
You know what? To draw a parallel, I can recognise that New Who is the only thing worth watching. But Classic Who has a place in my heart.
That's interesting. I've never watched any Classic Who, you know?
I think I would hate it too.
The only thing I know from
it's got no sense of humour.
Oh really? I thought it'd have loads of humour.
No. Like it has a bit, and it's like, I guess the more it gets into the 80s, it gets a bit camp, so you'd maybe start to enjoy it in the 80s in a sort of like kitsch way.
Yeah.
But no, like the revered episodes like Genesis of the Daleks and the Caves of Androzani, honestly I can't imagine you.
Do they take themselves very seriously?
Very seriously indeed.
But like, it doesn't look serious when you watch it, right?
Everything's made of paper and bubble wrap.
Yeah, I feel like everything I know about Classic Who is I used to have those books. I don't know if you remember them. They were like, it was like an aliens book, a monsters book, and something else. I can't think.
Justin Richards was behind those.
They were great, and like, I loved that it had like every time those monsters like appeared in the different episodes and stuff. I feel like I really learned a lot about like episodes I would never watch from that, which was really fun. Mm-hmm. I was upset. My books were like so battered by the end. Like I had like all three of them.
It was like monsters and aliens.
Monsters and aliens. It was like villains and enemies or something like that. They all had like pairs.
Villains and enemies.
Enemies, I said, not enemies. That'd be a sharp twist. no, but I loved those. I also had like an encyclopedia one.
Yes.
Like everything that was
good. Yeah, that was
hardback one.
Gary Russell Encyclopedia.
Yeah.
I remember it well. I actually, when I was a child, made my own version that was...
what, in like a notepad?
On... oh my God, you're going to die. On, so it was an encyclopedia of my own body of work. So as a child, I was like big into writing fiction.
Yeah.
I wrote a lot of stories and stuff.
In the Doctor Who world or just in general?
In general.
Both, yeah.
So I would I rifled through like all of my stories that I'd written up to that point, and I made like an equivalent encyclopedia of like the Molly Marsh universe. And I...
You made a wiki, basically.
Yeah. And I did it on Microsoft Access.
I don't even know what that is.
It's like the MS Office database program.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Is it still...
Is the one
title still live?
No. Obviously not.
Lost to the...
Completely abyss. Lost. Yeah. Now, we started talking about Doctor Who a little sooner than I thought we would. So let's cycle back. You said we're good friends. How do we know each other? What's the backstory there?
We know each other because we both did Amdram Theatre together.
As, we did, yeah.
Like, I guess teenagers. Yeah. I think I was about 11 when I joined, but obviously you had family connections that had you in deep.
Make it sound like the mafia.
To be fair, there was quite, you know, it was kind
a bit of
a,
an NK mafia.
Yeah, and you had to, you know, there was definitely power players and power families.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
My family were not really involved. It was just me. So just I didn't really have any like family weight to throw around.
It was a bit of an only gay in the village vibe in your family, right?
Yeah. But obviously that one family with like a lot of kids.
Yes.
And like, I feel like they were like, I don't know, such a dynasty roaming around the forum. I mean, I obviously don't want to say their names because...
Who are you thinking of?
The Taylors.
Oh, sure. Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
They are a dynasty. Yeah, you're right.
They had like... They were all over that place.
Yeah, like a rash.
Yeah.
I started going when I was really young. My mum got involved as a tutor. My mum was a dancer. She got involved as a tutor. I think she taught
you
to dance, right?
Did your mum
go
as a member first?
No.
Oh, she just came
rocked up as a tutor.
Okay.
I actually went as a member before my mum got involved. And then my mum met her husband through NK.
Yeah.
Who is now the father of my brother and sister. And I knew you. I didn't know you well, though. We didn't really interact that much.
I remember like having classes with you on like on the acting classes for
but
sure.
But we didn't have chats.
We didn't. I remember thinking you were really fun, though. I remember thinking like, oh, like you're bringing really quirky chats and vibes to the table.
Yeah.
I remember thinking your outfits were crazy. I was so norm then.
To be honest, though, my outfits were pretty crazy. Like I was quite an eccentric child.
You were pushing the boat out.
I would wear flares.
Oh yeah, that was quite standard routine for you.
Before flares were.
Yeah.
Back in. But yeah, no, I think it's funny. I was talking to my mum about this the other day. I think there were a lot of power plays. There were a lot of cliques. And I mean, in the same way that I felt like an outsider at school, I felt different, even in the place that was supposed to be like my place. So there were times like, even when like my stepdad would direct the shows. So like, I guess, you know, like he directed Back to the 80s. And like, I guess in theory I should have been like a cool kid, but my mum said I would always just sit in the corner.
I don't remember you like that though.
Yeah.
I remember you being a big personality, and I also remember, obviously I do agree
that. I was a bit of a womanizer, Anke, actually.
That's true, you were.
I remember when I was Dodger, and there was a local radio DJ playing Fagin.
Yeah.
And he...
Weird time.
Yeah, very weird time. And he told me off for not concentrating and just being backstage snogging the girls.
Told you off. There were so many tellings off, actually.
So many tellings off.
It was quite a strict place.
Was, yeah. Yeah.
Like, people used to flip at, like, people used to get sent out for talking. Like, it was
Kerry Day ruled with an iron fist.
Yeah, she was scary, man.
Yeah.
Like, she was scary. I can't remember what I was going to say, but I had something about NK to say. Oh, I remember, what I was going to say is, I remember... Although I agree with you that you were probably an outsider, or like, I don't think you were, you know, you definitely stood out for your quirks, but I feel like you were, in my memory, you were so like respected as a good performer and like someone that people really valued. I think even people who would never really mingle with you in school probably felt that.
I think that's true. I actually agree with you there.
Yeah.
But yes, then we started kind of, we, you know, I moved away to university. We're kind of just chatting online then about music.
Yeah, we're like weird pen pals.
Weird pen pal vibes, yeah. And
I don't even know how that started.
I don't really know either. I think it was like, you know, the odd reply to a tweet here, the odd DM there. Yeah, we would go back and forth about music. And initially, you had like quite a different music taste to me.
Yeah, I'd say so.
And it's still different.
But I'd say it's so weird. Like, I think back at the kind of songs that I would have made you listen to then, and like I think that's so different to the songs that I make you listen to now.
Yeah.
Not fully, but like there's definitely a difference.
I guess like the reductive way of looking at it is that you were into like pop girlies.
Yeah.
And I was into men with guitars.
Yeah.
And then I sort of, you sort of got me into pop girlies.
We've both
bit.
Kind of met in the middle.
But now, yeah, but it's with the other way around, it didn't happen till later, I feel.
True.
You've got into guitar music now.
Yeah.
It still takes a lot to convince you to listen to a male vocalist.
That's true. And I stand by it.
But but yeah, there is a, there's more of a, it's more of a melting pot now.
Yeah.
But yeah, I wouldn't be into loads of the music I'm into if it weren't for you. I wouldn't listen to nearly as many women as I do if it weren't for you.
That's nice.
I mean, I remember sitting down in 2015 and like putting together a list of my favourite albums, and Joni Mitchell was the only woman on there.
That is crazy, isn't
fucking
it?
Fucking nuts. And like, it, I don't really know why, because I listen to so much music by women now and it's all great.
Yeah. But I swear, did, like, when you were making those lists, like, did you listen to Haim and stuff then? Because you love Haim.
No.
You just got into that later on?
Yeah.
That's weird, because I do associate you with a lot of girlies.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's I guess things have just changed. And I do think that women have become, like, a bigger force in...
For sure. I mean, like,
indie music and guitar music.
Even mainstream, like the nominees this year for like at the Grammys are way more female dominated.
For sure. For sure.
Which is very nice for me as someone who makes a lot of lists and rankings, because sometimes I think like, oh, am I just not putting any men in? But actually, I think that I'm quite good at picking the like good stuff.
I think so, yeah.
And I think I've definitely...
And it maybe sort of doesn't matter if you don't put any men in.
Oh, no, for sure. But unless I like... but I would never deny it, you know what I mean? I think sometimes I like having like the odd song that I don't think people expect me to love. And I'm like, didn't know I listened to that, did
you? The Smiths.
You
had The Smiths in one of your playlists.
I did. I love How Soon Is Now. I got into The Smiths because of Charmed. When How Soon Is Now was a Charmed theme tune. And it was a cover.
The gayest route to The Smiths I've ever heard.
It is. That's true. They didn't even use The Smiths version. It was someone else covering it. But it got me into The Smiths from that. Also Gavin and Stacey.
Do you fancy opening a window? It's quite warm. Do you feel warm?
I'm pretty neutral, but I'm a bit flushed anyway because drinks and not sleeping.
Can I put that down? Yeah, for sure. If you get too cold, just let me know.
I don't think I'm too cold. I'm quite a warm person.
Gorge. Okay. We should start talking about Doctor Who, really.
Oh, yeah, that sounds good.
So you were into Doctor Who as a kid, that's right?
Yeah,
what's the backstory there?
The backstory is, I really remember there being like billboards for the new Who series. Mm-hmm. And my dad, who obviously watched it when it was like in classic Who days, he was really building the hype up to me. I remember him being like, oh, I can't wait for this. Like, this, I used to love this when I was a kid. Like, you're going to love it. So I feel like I was really seated for Rose that episode. Like, I was on board. I'd bought into the promo. I was ready.
Yeah.
So pretty much my
journey... There's that trailer where she's like,
I've got a choice.
Yeah.
What did she say? She's like, I've got a choice. I could stay at home with my mum, my dad. Oh, sorry. No, my mum, my boyfriend, my job, something like that. And then she's like, I'll chuck it all in for danger.
And it's been used in loads of memes about going on the
I remember it was when pandemic, I did a viral tweet of it, and it was like me deciding whether to go to the corner shop for a can of Coke.
Yeah.
Good times.
Yeah, so you were kind of on the hype train. You watched series one.
Yeah, I watched it all. I never really missed it an episode in the Russell T. Davies era at first. I was like kind of prime age, I guess. I think I was about 9 or 10 when it was coming out.
For sure.
And I also had like already, I think I had quite like, I loved horror and I loved sci-fi anyway. I think I had quite grown up tastes. So like the themes were very me. So I was on board. I was buying the merch. I was having action figures. Like I was in.
Oh, really? You had action figures and shit?
Yeah, I had over 100.
Over 100 Doctor Who action figures? You joking me?
No, I'm deadly serious. I sold them all in like 2012.
That's crazy.
I should have just got them. Yeah.
That's so flop. I had, I never had the Doctor Who action figures until I got older. And then in 2017, I went through like I'm a collector phase. Mm-hmm. Because I started an account on Twitter called Who Merch. Where I would tweet about the history of Doctor Who merchandise,
yeah,
based on like information I'd found online, And then people started like looking to me as like a source of info about, and I didn't really have a collection. So I thought, I better get a collection. So I ended up like spending probably 2,000 quid in the space of a year.
That is crazy.
On like action figures, magazines. I bought like a Cyberman lampshade from the 90s. Like it was crazy. But as a child, it was all about Star Wars figures.
Yeah, I was really big Buffy figures, and then that kind of went off. So then, but like Doctor Who figures were great for me because they were in every shop. Like they were in Toys R Us, they were in B&M. They were like, you could get them from so many places.
There's a picture that goes around Twitter quite often now when people are sort of longing for like the halcyon days of that era of Doctor Who. Mm. They'll post like the photo of the Toys R Us display, you know, and it would have like the big photo.
I've not seen it, but I feel like that would make me like grin.
Yeah, it's a photo that does around a lot of people. Like, why haven't we got this now? Because, like, I'm sorry. And I'm, you know, I'm sure my friends who work on the brand would be able to give me lots of valid reasons, but why can I not buy a Beep the Meep plushie?
Yeah, true. I wonder, is the demand there?
Maybe that is it, yeah.
Because I think, well, I don't know, it's weird looking back.
Cause I think kids buy toys less now.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. But it's weird thinking of, I don't think that Doctor Who quite has the, like, a huge section of Toys R Us level of, like, dominance that it still has. But it's weird because I looked at B&M the other day just out of interest and they still had, like, a little Doctor Who bit.
Oh, I mean, B&M, though, it's a bit different. Like, they have exclusive sets now.
Yeah, I saw that.
And people like, lose their minds over it and they're, like, ringing B&M in advance, like, to see it. Like,
the B&M staff must be tearing their hair out.
And there's, like, always loads of controversy because scalpers go to B&M.
What are scalpers?
They're people who will scalp all of the Doctor Who toys from B&M. They'll buy like the whole lot and then sell them on at ridiculous value. And often to like people in the States and stuff who can't access them. Mm. And that for a bit they had to start doing like, you can only have like two each.
Like when Prime
went crazy. Yeah.
God, yeah. These staff at these shops, they don't get a day off. Like, why do they have to put up with like manic Doctor Who fans buying their tat? Like, for God's sake.
But yeah, I don't think kids buy toys as much anymore because I think it's all iPad now. I know that makes me sound like such a boomer, but I think it is the case.
Say boomer.
Looking at my own brother, like, yeah, he plays with Lego. Like, I don't think Lego's ever going away.
A bit timeless, isn't it?
Lego? But like, often I'll go home and he's on Fortnite.
Yeah. Yeah. But then I was a video gamer kid too, but I still had time to like, I don't even know what I even did to my action figures. I definitely blurred worlds. I feel like Buffy's and Doctor Who's were mingling together.
Oh, see that Harrison Brocklehurst is where we are different. I think this is probably why I never got into Doctor Who figures, because I was like, well, I need more than a few to make a story.
Yeah. I was very stories.
I was very stories too. However, I would not cross over. So I had quite a lot of superhero figures, but I would never mix DC and Marvel because I was like, it's a copyright nightmare.
Oh my God.
And if I was like in the middle of a story and like a friend came over, I wouldn't let them play with the toys because I was in the middle of a story and they didn't know.
I think that's fair.
The backstory.
I don't even think I'd even show my friends that them. I think they were kind of a dirty secret.
Oh, really?
Mm. I feel like my parents are very much like calling them dolls and me being really pissed off that they were calling them dolls vibes.
I feel like this is maybe getting into personality assassination. But were you at school like a little bit more concerned with like what people thought of you than I was maybe?
Yeah, for sure.
Like I did not give a fuck what anybody thought of me. Almost
I think it made it your thing.
Almost like too far the other way though sometimes where like...
Yeah, didn't you wear fez for a bit?
I did not wear a fez.
No. I thought you did.
No, I'm not.
What was the era you said you went through like an era of wearing like a quiz?
Cowboy hat.
Okay, so yeah, that, pardon me for breathing.
That kind of thing. I would like I showed it to Sixth Form College in lipstick. You know, but even at secondary school, people used to wear their ties really short at school. Yeah. Did you wear a really short tie?
Medium. I was house captain. I couldn't be playing around.
I wore my tie like down to my knees, just to be a contrarian. And I feel like that wasn't your energy. Like, you were different, but you weren't different for the sake of it.
No, I actually think I've spent quite a lot of time trying to fit in. I was friends with quite, like,
Your friends with like the popular girlies.
Yeah. And
the plastics.
It's weird because like I do think I was generally friends with everyone, but like I
can imagine the kind of kids you were.
I was like, a mingle around.
Like nice to everyone, but you've got the popular kids on side.
I was lucky with like definitely bullying stuff wise because I had the popular girlies very on side, so like the lads wouldn't really bother me the same way. I mean, I'm sure they made the odd comment, but I never felt like bullied.
Yeah. I was very much bullied at school.
Yeah. I always feel quite lucky that I never felt like that.
I was bullied by someone who's now in prison for murdering somebody.
Oh my God.
Yeah. He was apprehended in South America.
That's quite traumatic.
It's really awful, isn't it?
Was it quite like savage bullying as well?
Yeah, he would put his fingers in my perineum.
What is that?
Gooch.
Oh my God. Why did you just say gooch? We're all friends here.
until I let out a little squeal.
That's quite like gay.
Yeah.
Like, why was he doing that?
Yeah. And everybody else would laugh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was there a lot of like lads taking each other's trousers down in the changing rooms in PE?
Yeah, a bit. And I had to pretend that I wasn't into it.
Everyone would laugh at my bits.
I never had it happen to me. I remember
everyone
once
was like Nelson from The Simpsons, like
someone called me Rocket Nips once. That was really hard. That was very humbling. Which is weird.
Well,
I think
because you've got pointy nips.
Well, I don't think they're even that pointy.
I mean, I can't picture your nipples. I've got to be honest.
They're quite
with you.
Patty, like burger patty nips, yeah, really. Okay. More than rocket nips, which I thought was really. But, you know, quite spacey Doctor Who, actually.
So mad how these things like stick with you, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where was I? Okay, Doctor Who.
Yeah.
You had the figures, you had everything. Was there a point? Well, okay, question number one. It's no secret that a lot of queer people are into Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Do you feel that you're... I mean, my favourite thing you've ever told me is that you came out 20 minutes after you realised you were gay.
That's true, yeah. I just made a group chat.
It's the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life.
There was no turmoil going on. It was just like, oh, yeah. Quite weird, actually.
Does your interest in... I mean, we'll get onto Buffy in a bit, but, like, your interest in things like Doctor Who and Buffy, does it feel linked to, like, your journey with your sexuality or not really? Or do you think there's like, what do you think the reason is that, you know, so many queer people were into Doctor Who as children?
I think it's like the characters who are like, obviously like there's a lot of strong female characters in Doctor Who. And also for me, I feel like the campness, it's weird because you don't even know that you like the campness when you're not, when you're a kid, but you must be like, and same with Buffy and Doctor Who, like there's a sharpness to the writing that makes it like, you feel clever watching it a bit, I think, as well. And I think that kind of thing makes... I don't know, you just...
It feels like slightly countercultural, maybe.
Yeah.
Do you feel like the Doctor as a male role model is like... Because I certainly felt like this as a kid, I think. It's kind of... it was a male role model who was not the same kind of macho figure that some other... You know, he's not James Bond.
For sure.
And he's not Han Solo. He's a different kind of, there's something queer about him.
For sure.
I mean, especially now.
And it's weird because it wasn't that he was like not macho either. Especially like now Eccleston. Like Eccleston's got a manliness to him, but it's weird because it's not, like you say, it's completely different to like an action hero-y man.
It's a different kind of manliness, isn't it? Yeah.
But he is kind of macho.
The older
kind of
I get, the more I fancy Christopher Eccleston.
Oh my God, I fancy him so much. It's the leather as well. Like, I didn't think of it at all when I was a kid. Obviously, I didn't really think about anything, I guess, that way. But
yeah,
it's crazy. Like I think we probably both relate to the Manchesterness.
That's
what makes it hot to me. It's like he really feels like someone who I could know,
like your dad's mate.
Yeah.
So, when did Doctor Who fall off for you?
I guess after Russell T Davies era. I mean, I stuck with it for the first couple of Moffat and Matt Smith kind of seasons, I think. I think I definitely watched 5 and 6. I rewatched all like the Pandorica and that kind of stuff, I was like, I don't remember that happening at the time. I think I was zoned out watching
that Pandorica episode. Is my favorite episode of Doctor Who ever.
I know you absolutely love it, but like by that point, I think, I mean, what years were then coming out? Like 2011?
2010 was series 5.
Yeah, so I was like 14 now. I was like kind of, I was doing loads of theatre at the time. I was like at NK like four nights a week. I just don't think it was on my,
not in your radar anymore.
My radar, yeah. I think I've kind of grown out of it, and the people that I, the things that I loved about Doctor Who weren't really there anymore.
It's not got that camp thing. It's not gay like it was with Russell. You know, and not just because, it's not just that Stephen Moffat isn't a queer person. I mean, maybe that's why his writing is like this, but the stories, you know, it's a lot of stories about straight couples, you know?
Yeah.
Even having a married straight couple on the TARDIS in Amy and Rory, you know, the Doctor and River having their romance. It's all kind of like middle-class straight suburbia.
Yeah.
Especially, which is valid, but it's just really different.
Yeah. And I think it's so... I feel like the things that I really loved about Doctor Who and that I still love the most about it is like so many of my favourite moments or little throwaway things are just not even... I feel like in the Moffat era, everything was very governed by the main plot or like the desire to do something really serious.
Sure.
And all those little silly moments of like just stupid things like when Jackie Tyler's like, ooh, and then you know, she's like, when Christopher Eccleston finds her and stuff, and she's like, ooh,
yeah,
anything could happen. Like, I don't feel like Moffat ever played with that kind of stuff. And those little moments is what made me really fall in love with that show.
Yeah, it's funny because he definitely has a sense of humor, just in a
different.
I think actually, you know, if you were to break it down in Moffat's script, every other line is a gag, right? As opposed to the Davis scripts, but that's not the case. But the comedy's less broad and it's less. Yeah, it's less quotidian like that. You're right.
I think I'm just like, I think what I love about Russell's writing and everything that he does is he is very good at like, in fact, it's just something I like in media in general is I love like things that just can almost change genre in like a scene or like things can go from like hilarious to really emotional really fast. And I mean, not to bring Buffy back up already, but it's literally like, it's the same kind of thing.
I was
going
to say we'll get to that in a minute. Yeah.
Like, and I think that's why I love those early ones so much. It's because like you literally have me laughing and then like I'm on the edge of my seat like crying at how emotional something is.
Yeah, you're right. And the tone is more consistent, I feel, in the Moffat era, maybe. Especially in his episodes. I don't know. But also like the relationships themselves are a little like straighter in like both senses of the word. Like you think about the sort of, I was going to say triangle, but the I guess the beauty of it is not really a triangle between Rose, Mickey and the Doctor, right? It's like, you know, when Mickey's traveling in the TARDIS in series two, he's like not Rose's boyfriend anymore, but he's sort of fulfilling that role and like she's sort of having this romance with the Doctor and it's all a little bit blurry and everyone seems kind of cool with that.
Yeah.
Whereas, which is kind of how relationships sometimes work in real life, like it's, you know, but then in the Moffat stuff, I'm thinking of a particular scene in series six where Rory and Amy are married by that point and they meet up with the Doctor for the first time in a while and the Doctor turns to Rory and he says, Mr. Pond, permission to hug?
And
it's a bit cringe. and Rory's like, yeah, and then he hugs Amy.
Yeah.
And it's like quite like traditionalist.
Yeah, like why is he asking that? Like,
it's like also ask Amy's permission.
Yeah.
That she's the one you're hugging, bitch.
Yeah, I feel like Stephen Moffat had a few like moments.
He
like
has
that
a few little moments like that. I mean, the most egregious one is when
doesn't like Matt Smith 4 or something.
When he says about Clara, like,
oh yeah, yeah,
she's
yeah,
she's a mystery wrapped up in enigma, wrapped up in a skirt that's just a little bit too tight.
Ew, like, wow. who was that for?
Sick. Oh, he's sick down my front. But yeah, and then are you like tuning in occasionally as the years go on, or are you completely checked out? Like during like late Smith, Capaldi.
I remember watching. I think I fully came back in for like the Capaldi and Bill season, but I don't think. I think the ones before that, I don't think I watched until I did like a proper big rewatch. I think I just missed loads. I definitely missed all like Angels in Manhattan era.
Sure.
All that kind of like Clara handovery bits, I just completely like didn't watch at the time. I only watched Angels in Manhattan for the first time like recently.
Really?
Yeah.
You must have seen the 50th.
No, I never seen the 50th. I don't think I've even seen it now. Is that the one with
the one with Matt Smith, David Tennant, the War Doctor, sorry, and John Hurt? Yeah.
No, I've never seen it. I've obviously seen clips.
Oh, fuck, it's so good. You should watch it.
I should watch it. I should watch it.
And then Jodie Whittaker era. Where are we with that?
I watched it all and I hate it. Sorry.
You watched it all though. Why did you watch it all if you hate it?
I
don't get why you're not watching the Smith and Capaldi stuff even though you don't hate it.
At this point, though, like at the time of Jodie coming back on, I'd already kind of dipped back on for Bill and Capaldi. So I was already back on the show.
Yeah.
So, and I also, I was really excited for A Female Doctor. So I kind of, I wanted it to be good.
Yeah.
And.
Oh, we all did, baby. We all did.
Yeah. We all did. And so, yeah, I was seated, bolted, ready for
Woman
it.
Who Fell to Earth, which is like Jodie's first episode.
And the Teeth Man thing.
Yeah. Was like was one good. Of the most. Watched Doctor Who episodes ever. It was like 10 million viewers, and then after the first couple of the figures immediately go like but yeah, the public were excited for it.
Yeah, of course, it was a big change, and especially as like a long-term fan, like I and the same with like why people are getting back onto it now, like people always have, I think there's a lot of reverence for like the old, I guess, or like the or
definitely.
A new start and stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, I kind of got back on for Jodie, watched it all, hated it.
Why did you hate it?
I hated the writing. I thought the writing was really bad.
Yeah.
And it's a shame because I think the cast is actually really likable.
I mean, I've been over listening to the podcast a lot. Yeah. I burned my bridges on this podcast with Chris Chibnall when I suggested that he wasn't able to dress himself in the morning. I'm not going to take those words back.
What were the Chibnall episodes that he wrote before he came on to do it? Because they were quite good ones, right?
They were like exactly fine.
Okay.
He wrote 42.
Oh, yeah.
Which mid. Is so mid.
Good idea, but also things we've done, like the timer thing, I've seen a million times, but yeah. Fine.
Yeah. The Hungry Earth and Cold Blood, the Silurian two-parter.
Not ones.
It's like, again, mid, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Dinosaurs on a Spaceship.
Boot. I'm over it. I hate that one.
The Power of Three.
I don't think I've seen that.
You have. It's in that same season. Oh. It's the one with all the cubes. You know, when there's like random black cubes that appear everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What a weird mix of stuff that he did.
Yeah, really random, right?
How did he get the gig? Do we know? Did he just like apply for it?
He was, I mean, he's always been a Doctor Who fan. He'd written some other stuff. He wrote this thing, I forget what it was called. He was already a successful TV writer, essentially, and he did ITV like Law and Order UK. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember it, but I don't remember like
it
the
had,
UK.
It had Free Mirage Man, yeah. And it had Bradley Walsh.
Okay,
yeah.
I remember when Bradley Walsh was announced. I remember a lot of naysayers. But I actually thought I was really excited.
Oh, he was brilliant.
For Walsh.
He was really good.
He was
in
probably
it as
he was the best companion in my report.
For sure.
Like
no
a lot of warmth.
Which is mad. Him and John Bishop were the best companions of that whole era.
For sure.
Which is like, okay, so Chris Chibnall can write a good character when they're a man his age.
Yeah. And like both kind of like stud casty a bit.
A little bit, yeah. Do you fancy John Bishop?
Yes, so much.
I thought you would.
So much. one of his sons is on my drama course for a bit and then left. But I remember being like, oh my God, that's John Bishop's son. And he was really good.
Are you back on board now?
Oh, yeah. It's weird because even when I wasn't on board, I probably still would watch every Christmas one or like and things like that. Like I don't think I was ever out. I was always kind of following what was going on, even if I wasn't watching. Like I probably generally know what was happening.
Yeah.
And then obviously since the Russell news and like everything like that, I've been like fully back on board because I mean I couldn't ask for anything more. Really.
Did you watch like Russell's other stuff in the interim, like Cucumber and stuff?
Yeah, I think I watched them all.
Oh, Cucumber's so good.
I think Cucumber's
so
underrated.
I think it's so underrated. I think it might be the best thing he's done.
I think it's literally terrifying. The obviously that main bit where like the really bad thing happens.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. But I think it was like one of the first times I'd seen that kind of like toxic, like straight guy toying it around thing and like how it could turn out. And I think
it's so well acted as well.
It's so well acted. And also like how I've had so many chats with lads like that and you can't, it makes you think like, God, like it can be so unsafe.
For sure. And I certainly feel like that, like,
you
know, as a trans person, like
that
feeling of like, it's fine now, but
what if the tide
could turn, especially when like, sorry, I've just completely taken the topic off you, but like with me, like sometimes people don't know and then they know and it's like, are they going to be violent or?
Yeah, it's scary.
And I guess in your situation, it's more, are they, you know, someone might be into it and then might suddenly have these feelings of self-hate or whatever.
Yeah. I always think like, I remember like some lads that I used to speak to, like not to be too gross, but when they'd like... when it was all was said and done, I feel like they were in such denial that it ever happened. Or like,
yeah.
Like, not like post-com clarity, but it was kind of just like, sorry if that's vile, but like, they were like almost just completely dismissive that it ever happened once they happened to them.
Sure.
I mean, thank God that's all that ever happened rather than something violent, but like, you really see the switch in people like coming
definitely
down.
Did you have people kind of like, have you ever had like people like blanking you, like you'd see them in public?
Yeah.
Having had those conversations in private and it's like...
Definitely.
As if it never happened.
Yeah. It's weird.
Horrendous.
And also at this time, I'm like 17. Like...
Yeah, so
I
mean, grim.
I'm not a big man who can just like handle it. Like, literally. I was hot on my sleeve. I was like, good.
Yeah. Yeah, and Cucumber does such a good job of representing
so
that.
Good.
Obviously, It's a Sin is great.
Yeah. I actually didn't really like Years and Years that much. My least favourite. But I think if I
Years
rewatched
Years and Years,
it,
I think is a bit half and half. Like, yeah. I really like... Years and Years when it's at its bleakest.
Yeah.
I get what he was doing with the happy ending.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
I remember thinking it was quite on the nose. I was
it's like, a bit on the nose. It's I feel like what he didn't want to do was be like, yeah, the world's fucking shit. He didn't want to end on that note. But I feel like there maybe would have been better ways of making it more hopeful.
Yeah. I also felt like maybe if I rewatched now as like the world's moved on a bit, I felt like at the time it felt like I was just watching like current events dramatized. In like,
sure, yeah,
and
it's, yeah.
I find that really tedious. And I found, especially like in theatre and stuff as well, I feel like there's a real push of like everything's got to be very topical or to the news rather than just like be entertaining for like a story's sake. Right? Everything's very like to an issue or to a thing. And
I went to see a play like this last night, actually. Was that, although I did think it was quite good with Matt Smith in it. He was like the lead in it, and it was like a reimagining of a Henrik Ibsen play, but it had this whole, it was kind of about local politics, right? And he was like this, there was contamination in the local water, and Matt Smith plays this medical officer who's like trying to get it the secret out there that the water's contaminated, and everybody's like, you can't tell people because it will have to close down the baths and it'll affect the economy.
Did they make a film of this recently? With Matt Ruffalo in.
What's it called?
That Waters or something.
Oh,
it came out like in 2019.
The play's called An Enemy of the People.
Maybe the it's a very similar story. I remember it being about the water and the water supply.
But then Act Two, there's like a citizens' assembly, and they kind of break the fourth wall as if we're the citizens. And Matt Smith makes this crazy like 10-minute speech about how the world's gone to shit. It's very like Years and Years coded.
Yeah.
And then the audience are invited to share their own thoughts, like a la Question Time, which was crazy, like, and such a risky thing to do.
So they just have like an improv bit, basically, in the show.
Literally, yeah. they're like, who agrees with Dr. Stockman, i.e. Matt Smith's character? People put their hands up, and then like, who's willing to share? And they just went and passed mics around, and members of the audience would like spew a load of vitriol about like society.
Were people saying good stuff or?
There were a few people where I was like, that's vapid, or like, I've heard that before. But there's a few people who were like, you know, I'm a doctor, or, you know, I'm a PhD student in this, and like, this is how I feel. And it was really moving. And like, even when it wasn't moving, it was like, cool to be in that space witnessing that.
Yeah.
But you are right that it sometimes it's like, just being topical isn't good enough.
Yeah. And I also felt like, I mean, when I was still writing theatre, I guess, or like when I wanted to, I felt like the only things that were getting commissioned or getting like funding from the Arts Council were all very like topical or like relating to like a new... And I just think sometimes it's like... I think it's obviously important that those stories are told, but I think sometimes there's like a real lack of just like telling stories for the sake of being like great stories. Like, where's the funding for just being like...
Yeah, and I think good. it can lead to like a lot of uniformity.
Yeah.
Like everything's kind of the same.
Yeah.
Years and Years, though, actually doesn't feel like that. It's just it just doesn't, for me, doesn't thematically quite hit the mark with the ending.
Some great moments, though. I'm really moving stuff.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that Anne Reed speech about the T-shirt is really good. £1 T-shirt.
Yeah.
Although I know some people have an issue with that because it's like, oh, you're putting the responsibility on the consumer and whatever. So Russell's back, you're back on board. What did you think of the Tenet specials, briefly?
I didn't really like the first one. I thought the first one was a bit of a mess. What was that one called?
The Star Beast.
Star Beast, yeah. Mm. I liked when I read the context of him, like, wasn't it like a comic or something?
Yeah, it was adaptive,
like,
mate.
Yeah, I thought that was nice, but I just felt like some of the writing there in that episode was a bit hit and miss for me. Do you agree?
I agree, yeah.
Yeah. I absolutely loved the second one.
So up your street.
So up my street.
So horror.
Yeah, and like, it really reminded me of Event Horizon and kind of like, I love any films about like, any horror in space, I like love.
Yeah.
So like, when it's going like, when we're on like an abandoned spaceship and like, what happened here? What happened to the crew? I'm in. Yeah. And it was so my thing. I loved how weird it was. I thought the writing was great. And I loved that the whole episode was just basically, it rested on the laurels of how great like Tennant and Tate's chemistry is.
Yeah.
And I think that just like shone.
Like, I love that they were like, look, we've got them for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Let's really like squeeze them for like ring them for what they're worth, yeah, for that second week.
And you know, I remember when I watched the first week, I was a bit kind of like, oh, what if this is not going to be as good as I remember it being? Mm. And I think by the second one, I was like, right, okay, this is like,
we're back on board.
We're back on board. And like, I'm watching like, literally a god tier episode, I would say, of like one of my favorite parents ever.
For
like,
sure.
It was one of those things where I was like, if I could go back and tell myself, like, by the way, in like 10 years, if not more, you're going to get another one. Like, it's literally crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be 20 years next year since David Tennant's first appearance in Doctor Who.
That is wild.
Which is fucking crazy, isn't it? And then the last one, The Giggle.
I like The Giggle a lot.
Neil Patrick Harris, amazing.
The budget, I've never seen it look that good a show.
But they've got Disney money.
But it really showed, yeah, like, I mean, not to shade Marvel, but Marvel has Disney money in their films to look crap. So, like,
yeah, because Marvel overreach and they overwork their CGI people, and you end up with films like Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania. And then Chidigatwa. Do we love him?
Oh, we love him.
We're wowing, aren't we?
We are.
We're wowing, bowing, chairman bowing, Highland cowing.
Yeah, like his. I never even really watched Sex Education. I've watched it a bit, so I don't have like loads of Shuri Gatwa kind of, you know, reverence already coming in. Apart from what I've seen him in interviews and like the vibes, I didn't really have like, I didn't really know what to expect from him acting wise, I guess. And I was just like, I thought his presence was so warm and like fun, and yeah, I just can't wait for the full, like,
the full season,
a full reign. Yeah. Like,
what about Millie?
I think Millie's good. It just, I don't know. Yeah, I need to like see a full. I need to see more, but I don't not like her.
I love that she's a Manc.
Same. I think it's really been missing. It's weird though, because the Jodie era was a lot of Northern, but it didn't feel right.
No Mancs though. No Mancs.
No Mancs.
Also, it was fucking, I mean, there was Jodie Whittaker, Mandip Gill, I guess John Bishop too, but yeah, like, Tosin Cole was doing the fake accent, and that just ruined everything.
Yeah.
God, the amount I've gone on about Tosin Cole's accent on this podcast. I think I must have mentioned Tosin Cole's accent in 50 separate episodes.
Oh my God. A real bugbear.
It's a real bugbear. I think it ruined his performance. Anyway, everyone who's ever listened to this podcast knows that I think that, so I don't need to say it again. Where were we? Excited for the Shuri Gatwa era. I've asked this question to other guests. Is he the sexiest Doctor Who ever?
I fancy Christopher Eccleston more. I'm sorry, we've tread this water, but like, it's. I think I like uglier men. Like, no offense.
Like uglier men.
Yeah, I feel like Shuri's,
he's
like,
too pretty.
He's too pretty and gorgeous. Yeah. Same with David Tennant. Like, I do think, really? David Tennant's handsome, but like,
I think David Tennant is fitter now than he was in 2006. I hated all the
proper sideburny lamb chopsy bits that he had in like the.
Oh, his hair's really bad.
Yeah.
But I love that he's like a little older and more dilfy, you know?
But like that, if I'm wanting dilf, I still want Eccleston.
Yeah. Because he still looks good now.
I love sticky out ears on men.
Do
so
you?
So much, yeah.
Do you like a big nose as well?
We always say I'm going to pedal them.
Oh, God.
I want to pedal them ears, yeah.
Wow. Damn. Okay. So you wrote an article like 4 years ago?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was 2020.
Called These Doctor Who Characters Made Me Gay.
Yeah. One of my favourite things I've ever done, really.
It is a really cool article. It's in Vice, RIP.
I know. I think it was maybe my second or third commission. And also, it was the first time ever I'd had like an artist do a proper image for like my piece. And like having someone read your work and then create a bit of art for it is just so
so
lovely.
Cool.
Yeah.
So cool.
I was really moved by that. And it's still really like special to me, for sure.
Which characters were in your list?
We had Jabe from from the end of the world.
What I love, it's such a like cis gay man thing that like not basically none of the characters in the list were gay.
Yeah, there's only one man in it.
That's the beauty of it. Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're all just like
cool
icons.
Like, yeah, they are. Some with tragic ends, which I think makes
Jabe.
More,
yeah,
yeah. R.I.P. Jabe. I honestly think Jabe could have been like an amazing companion.
Oh my god,
but she would have been so good.
She couldn't have sat in prosthetics like that for every week. No,
that was honestly. It makes me think. God, how amazing is it when we don't do CGI and we just like really go to town and like gorgeous like work like that. In fact, everyone on that episode like looked unreal. Like also, they really went all out.
Her chemistry with Eccleston.
Yeah, so it was spicy.
So spicy.
Oh yeah, I love Jabe. She was on there. I think Cassandra was on there, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Like wow. I mean, a gay icon.
Canonically, Doctor Who's first trans character.
I love that. Love that.
Even if it is in what feels like slightly a transphobic way, I love that she's Doctor Who's first trans character. So great.
Yeah, I mean, like you're making the mark with a bang there, aren't you?
Really? Yeah, literally. I love when she comes back and she's like, "They got the skin from the other end."
Yeah,
and Rose is like, "So you're talking out of your
yeah." Yeah. They loved that bit. They were really proud of that.
Yeah, they were.
I can't think of what's done there now. Obviously, my number one was Jackie Tyler. Wow. I don't have anything but reverence for that woman. Like, she really... And I think she's just a gift that keeps giving as well. Like,
she is.
Like, the more I watch things... She's also the character that makes me cry the most.
Yeah. And she's basically... I love that... You've seen Big Boys, right?
Yeah.
She, like, basically plays the same character in Big Boys.
Well, do you know what was so nice is Jack Rook messaged me when I wrote that article.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And he was like, oh, my God, I've just, like, I'm getting funding for my show and I like, feel the same way about Jackie Tyler and I've cast Camille in it because I love her and like, I really want that kind of vibe. And I remember being like, oh, that's so exciting. And now it's so good to see one Camille just like having a great part in like an acclaimed show again.
For sure.
And she's so good at that. She just, no one does it like
so
her.
So heartwarming.
Yeah.
Who else was, there must have been other people in there. Let me
there was. Captain Jack was in there, which is a bit shameful actually. Like I hate, it's weird because I think John Barrowman is so gross, but I feel like Captain Jack is so sexy.
And Captain Jack is like, like, I think we forget that in 2005 it was still fairly unusual to have a bisexual character in basically what is a children's television program.
Yeah, for sure.
So and that's
just
cool.
Oh, yeah. Especially in those early days, like, I thought he had so much about him. I remember, like, when he was in that white T-shirt.
Oh, my God. In Boomtown.
And
it's when he's, like, fixing up the TARDIS in Boomtown in the white T-shirt. Oh, Will Owen.
Yeah, Boomtown, what an episode.
I tell you what's cursed, though, is when he came back in the Whittaker era and he's, like, had all the work done.
Yeah, weird.
And, cursed. What else have you got in here? I've got your article up here. Oh, Chantho.
Oh, wow.
Right, do you want to know something fucking crazy about Chantho?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to ask my friend if I can keep this in. So my friend... Isn't that so cool, though?
That is so
And then
cool.
The actor reappears in Series 4 as... you know, in Turn Left?
Yeah.
That's the same actor.
I clocked. Doctor Who loves doing that every now and again, don't they?
The Cat Nuns.
Cat Nuns, wow.
Another reappearing actor. One of the Cat Nuns is played by Adjo Ando.
Yeah, I did know that.
Yeah.
I rewatched New Earth not too long ago.
God, the Cat Nuns, so camp.
I love the We Have Claws thing so much. They're so great.
It says here, this is what you've written. The nurses at the hospital in New Earth were the feline femme fatale sisters of Plentitude. Graceful cat girlies dressed like they're in Kylie Minogue's Can't Get You Out of My Head video. That's so true. If this didn't scream gay rights enough on its own, they also refused to use guns because they have claws.
That is so camp, isn't it?
It is. Madame de Pompadour. You've next. Sophia Miles, though, fucking mental.
What,
have you ever looked at her Twitter?
No.
She's tapped.
In what sense?
And I don't mind saying that. she
Like politically?
A bit politically. You know, one of those celebrities who just like shouldn't have been allowed to have their own Twitter?
Oh, God.
And it's just like...
offensive stuff?
Some offensive stuff. A lot of just like...
Is she cancelled?
She's cancelled, yeah. Okay. A lot of just like posting... like, she clearly thinks she's a bigger star than she is. Like,
yeah, I don't really know what else she's done.
She was Penelope in the Thunderbirds film.
Did anyone watch that?
No. but she has, like, defended Noel Clarke. Like,
to the hilt?
Yeah, like, she's dying on that hill.
Okay.
Also, when the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial was happening, she... She was like in a movie with Johnny Depp once in the 90s. And she kept posting like the same photo of those two together and was like, Johnny's such a lovely man. Like, I think you've told me
that. That rings a bell, that.
Yeah, she's mental.
That is weird.
Madame de Pompadour, though, icon. Okay, Jabe, we got fucking Nancy.
Nancy, wow. Oh my God, I am so obsessed with the way that she does when she calls the guy out for having the secret affair.
There's the sweat on your brow.
There's the sweat on your brow. That is so good.
Trini and Susanna as robots.
Wow.
We love.
That's so 2005, isn't it?
Where have they gone?
God knows.
I mean,
God knows.
They've gone out the window with diet culture. Although diet culture's kind of back, so maybe they'll be back. I don't, to be clear, for the listener at home, I don't want that. My stance on diet culture is it's bad. before I get cancelled. There's also Davina Droid and Android in that episode.
All the droids hoot.
Davina Droid. I love that Davina McCall has now appeared in Doctor Who twice.
Same.
So iconic. Donna Noble, you've mentioned.
I think that needs to be said.
Yeah, I think needs to be said.
So many. Like, it's. I always felt like when I was writing that, I remember thinking, like, should I put like major characters in? Because it feels like a bit of a cop out. But like, they are.
Definitely.
And like, oh, just the. I think like when Don is like in her element and like the funny line is just literally unreal. I love Anne Marie. That's all I'm saying. Anne Marie. That is so funny.
I've just seen the next one. Margaret Slothy.
Wow. Oh my God. Love her. Love her so much.
So good.
And I love Boomtown.
And she's in fucking Big Boys as well. She plays the nan.
Yeah.
I
actually saw a red carpet picture of her today.
Really?
Yeah, random. She looked amazing. I don't know what she was doing, but she was on the red carpet last night.
She came to NK once to see one of the shows.
I didn't know that.
I like spotted her in the audience.
That's crazy. I'd be like fangirling so hard. Maybe I was there too, but I probably didn't clock her.
Captain Jack number 4. Rose Tyler number 3.
I love Rose so much.
We love Cassandra number 2. Number 1, of course, Jackie Tyler.
Yeah. You know what? That I wrote that 4 years ago. I stand by pretty much all of them choices.
Is there anyone you would add?
No. But there is. I would probably would take Captain Jack out, to be honest.
I feel like
I've got more ick over like the last 4 years.
Optics, but I mean, he is fully cancelled now.
Yeah, exactly.
Optics wise, maybe. I'm trying to think if I can think of anybody else from like across that kind of first 4 years.
Do you know what? I'd maybe put Sylvia Noble in.
Yeah, she's got something about her.
I think, especially after the specials.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I have such a new reverence for her. And I think she was one of my... Not, I guess you're meant to find her a bit of a knobhead in like...
Oh my God, she was hateful.
Yeah, I think she had a really nice redemption arc.
Definitely. That was one of the things I actually enjoyed the most about that first special.
Me too. She stole that episode for sure.
Her redemption arc. I'll tell you who you could put in there. This is a character that I have claimed in the past made me trans. Lucy Saxon.
Yeah, I always kind of wanted more from her. I'm sorry if I didn't. Did you find her sexy?
Sexy, but that's not what I mean.
Okay.
I kind of mean...
Did you want to be her?
A little bit. I just think she's camp. I think she's kind of femme fatale.
I don't think she ever gave us enough. I always wish they went further with it.
It's when she comes back and she like gets the... They get the lipstick off her lips and there's the potion. That's so camp.
Yeah, I don't know why I never warmed to her. I think it's because she didn't have any, like, it wasn't like a silliness.
Okay, we're Lucy Saxon haters here. okay, Buffy the Vampire Slayer is your first love.
It is my first love.
More so than Doctor Who.
Yeah.
More so than anything, really.
Literally more so than anything, yeah. I'm very encyclopedic with it, to be honest.
It was something I was never into as a kid or a teenager. I got into it in the lockdown.
Yeah. And you'd tell me every day, like,
I would tell you every day where I was up to. And you sort of got me, you know, I sort of thought, oh, Harrison likes this a lot. And so I watched it, like, start to finish, all 7 seasons. When in that same period when I was, like, living on my own. And I just fell in love with it. I love it
so
much. And there's a lot of... I mean, last year we met Sarah Michelle Gellar, didn't we?
We did. It was about a year ago.
We went to, I mean, I've spoken about this on the podcast before, actually. We went to this press event for this really dreadful television program she was
in. Yeah, it was like a spin-off of Teen Wolf or something. Wolfpack. Bad.
It was so bad.
I feel sorry for her because she's like, she should be on the White Lotus or something. What's going on?
It was the first thing she'd done in a while. Yeah. And it's like, come on, give her something better. Because she's a good
great actor. Yeah. I think people who haven't properly watched Buffy, they like, I think because she's done like such like kind of novelty kind of roles like Daphne and like Scream and kind of like horror things, I feel like people really don't give her the flowers that she deserves. But in like so many episodes of Buffy, she is an amazing actor.
Oh my God, in The Body.
In The Body, in just so many, my friend, you know, one of my greatest loves in life is like, my friends telling me they're watching or someone I know like starting it and I get to like hear what they think. Like I literally thrive off it. And someone I know who lives with my friend Sam, he's just started watching and he just watched like the episode at the end of series one. And there's like, it's not even a big bit really, but like there's some amazing Sarah acting there when she does the like, read me the signs, tell me my fortune. And she's like basically when she finds out she's going to die. And she's like, I'm 16 years old and I want to die. Like, I just think she plays it so good. And like, I think
and that incredible prom dress she's wearing.
Yeah.
So, what a show. I mean, to be honest, one of the things I love about Buffy, which is something I wouldn't have picked up on as a kid as much, is the fashion.
Yeah.
The costume design is incredible. I love particularly all of the outfits that Willow wears in the first like two seasons.
It's a bit cutesy. Maybe
it's a bit cutesy, but that's kind of my vibe, to be honest. It is. You know, my excuse is that I missed out on my childhood and adolescence. You know, that's my excuse.
Yeah.
But there is a link to me and to other scholars as well between Buffy and Doctor Who. It feels like it's kind of the same tradition, especially because Buffy happened after Classic Who, but before New Who.
Yeah.
And I feel like New Who, and Russell T. Davies has even said this, kind of modeled itself after Buffy a little bit.
Which was also why I was so excited. Another reason.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Buffy had just finished and I was kind of watching. I don't remember. I was not really old enough to be properly watching Buffy live, but I remember watching the final episode and being aware it was over and me being like, oh my God, Buffy's over.
Yeah.
And then I remember seeing like the blonde Rose Tyler kind of character who's so Buffy coded really. And the way she kind of like stumbles onto her new life is very similar to Buffy, like stumbling onto being the Slayer or whatever. And I think that it really bridged a nice gap of like something new for me to love in like a UK setting, and like the monster kind of antics and stuff are similar levels of scary and like,
for sure. I think Buffy's probably slightly scarier.
Yeah. And a bit more adult.
Especially
as it gets older.
There's a thing. Yeah. Like, there's a thing Joss Whedon always talks about when he conceived of Buffy, and it's this idea that it's like the damsel in distress from a horror film that you know is going to die, but then she turns it on its head and she fights back, and that was kind of his conception.
Links to that kind of like, it's always subverting your expectation a bit.
Right. And I feel like that's kind of the first scene of Rose.
Yeah.
Where she's in the back of the department store, and there's all of the Autons there, and it feels like a horror movie. Yeah. And then suddenly it flips it on its head and it becomes something different, and the Doctor's here, and it's all kind of, she survives, and you know, it kind of looks like she isn't going to survive. And but even like, you know, Buffy, you know she's going to survive because the show's called Buffy.
Yeah.
Same thing with the first episode of Doctor Who is called Rose, so you kind of know. But even still, you're like, how is this going to work? Because she is the damsel in distress who's going to get killed here.
Yeah, and I feel like the, especially in that early days of like Rose and Ninth Doctor, I feel like they have a very kind of like Giles and Buffy kind of relationship.
For sure.
Even though, well, obviously it's weird because I feel like there's a romantic subtext that is in the Doctor Who that is kind of never there in Buffy, which I think is really impressive.
Yeah, what with Giles and Buffy?
Yeah, it never feels weird. Never feels never, creepy ever. Old man. It never feels like, why is this old man with this gorgeous girl?
Yeah, I guess there's a couple of things there. I suppose Buffy as a character is slightly younger than Rose.
Yeah. Buffy's, well, that's weird because she feels older, because I think so much girls just like older vibes. But
yeah. I mean, I guess she becomes older as the series goes on.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
At the start, she's like 16.
She's 16, yeah. How old's Rose? 19?
19.
Yeah.
And it's set in a school.
Yeah.
So that kind of adds something to it. And yeah, Giles is just a different kind of character. Also, that sexual subtext doesn't really happen until Tennant comes on board.
I feel like it kind of...
It's there a little bit in series one.
Yeah. I think like by the end, I think it's kind of there.
Yeah. Yeah, you're probably right, actually.
But obviously it kind of kicks up a gear when like...
When it's a sexy youngster.
Yeah.
But no, you're right. And there is definitely like a watcher-slayer relationship between the Doctor and
it's that Rose. Kind of dynamic. It's like a wise person giving the thing and like a young, like scrappier girl getting like...
Obviously,
Rose doesn't have the powers or anything, but like the wiseness of it and the kind of like hand holding, I think, is very early days of Buffy.
And there is something kind of special about her.
Yeah.
You know, even though she's not got the powers. And even, like, the end of series one of Buffy, spoiler alert, she, like, has this rebirth because she dies and then gets resurrected. At the end of series one of Doctor Who, Rose has that crazy, like, staring into the heart of the TARDIS, becoming the bad wolf moment. It feels kind of similarly world-changing, similarly apocalyptic.
Also, Buffy was very formulative in, like, making season-long kind of arcs of, like, big bads.
Yeah,
I feel like Doctor Who really does that.
It really takes that from Buffy. Yeah.
Like, especially all the bad wolf thread, like, especially in that early series, kind of weaving through. You can't... I think when I was a kid, I didn't appreciate... I didn't really know that Buffy kind of started all that, or, like, to the... Or calling it big bad, or kind of, like... I feel like I didn't realise that was kind of a thing that Buffy really, you know, polished up, I guess.
For sure.
And it makes
it's like the monsters of the week
thing. Yeah.
It's like every episode is a monster of the week.
But
and
there's
then
also a...
There's also an arc, and Doctor Who did... And it seems obvious now, because every genre show does it, but Buffy pioneered it, Doctor Who took it on board. And then also the... Even the 45-minute format, because... I think it's easy to forget that in when Doctor Who was on telly in the 60s and 70s and 80s, it was serialized. So the episodes
were, I find that crazy.
Were 25 minutes long.
Yeah.
They were all usually four parts, sometimes six.
So when you watched one 25-minute a week and you have to wait a week for another part?
Yeah, the big cliffhanger and you'd have to wait. And kind of, you know, part of it is just that by 2005, there wasn't really telly like that anymore. Like, stuff didn't really work like that.
No.
But, you know, Russell could have gone for a half hour format. He could have gone for the full prestige hour. But he went for this like 45-minute with the occasional two parter in the season. It's taken something from Buffy to make that.
Yeah.
Like, just format wise.
Yeah. It's weird, like I think as a kid, I didn't even think I put two and two together about how obviously I'm going to love these two shows and like how many similarities they have. But as I've got older, I'm like, of course, these are the shows that I'm like obsessed with.
Yeah.
They're so in the same vein. It's crazy. Especially the Monster of the Weakiness. Like,
yeah. And the Monster of the Week kind of being a metaphor for something else. Also, the fact that both shows can kind of do anything. Like, their premises are so loose.
You can make anything work, yeah.
Kind of do it. Like, Doctor Who is a science fiction show in name only. Like, it's not really science fiction, it's fantasy. Like, yes, they're explaining it away with sci-fi a lot of the time, but, you know, at Christmas we had goblins.
Yeah.
You know, you think it was an episode like the Shakespeare Code, where it's literally witches.
Yeah, and or the Vampires of Venice and stuff.
Yeah, like, they'll...
And even though it's always, like, aliens...
They'll do some hand-wavy alien explanation, but it's...
They know what they're doing. They're giving us, like...
Giving us a fantasy thing, which is the same with Buffy, which kind of can do, it really can do anything, because they can say it's a demon, but then they had robots and stuff, didn't they?
I think what Buffy was good at is, like, they really, even with, if it seemed like a non-scary premise, like, there were demons that weren't, like, evil, so, like, almost anything could be happening.
For sure.
There wasn't such, like, black and white levels of, like, evil and good, so, like, you could just be a demon who was doing, like, up to nonsense mischief or being a bit of a loser, and I think that made it really, like, interesting lore-wise.
For sure. And then Torchwood.
I was obsessed with Torchwood.
But Torchwood takes even more from Buffy. Like, there are episodes...
But not as funny, I don't think.
No, not as funny. Probably because the writers aren't as sharp.
Yeah.
So, you know, to be honest, Russell T Davies isn't as sharp as Joss Whedon. His dialogue isn't as quippy.
No, it's more soapy.
Yeah, because, like, Whedon is really... I mean, he's kind of a bit of a scourge on movies now. You know, obviously... What we think of him as a person is whatever. But, like, he pioneered this, like, every character is quippy.
And also, like, he was so good at just... kind of the way that I speak, not to blow my trumpet too much, but, like, the way that I kind of just make my own abbreviations and assume that everyone's going to go with
it. Sure.
Just, I feel like I got that from loving Buffy so much.
Buffy was the first use of Google as a verb. Yeah. Crazy, right?
Crazy. And, like, but just, like, the way that Buffy will say, like, silly things, or, like, it makes sense because of what she's saying, but, like, the words don't exist. She'll be like slayerness. I don't know, just random things that don't really make
literally.
Sense. And, like, it's never quite right. It's very timey-wimey kind of...
Yeah.
Kind of...
Well, this is it. It's interesting you should use the example of timey-wimey, because I think dialogue-wise, Moffat is more of a successor to Whedon than Davies is. You know?
Yeah.
He, in Moffat stories... All the characters are quipping. everybody's the funniest person in the room. That's not as true in a Russell T Davies script. So it's interesting then to see that through line in a different way.
Yeah.
In Doctor Who's kind of second modern era.
Yeah.
And I think with Torchwood, that therein lies the issue, is there's not a writer on board like Moffat.
Yeah.
Russell barely wrote for the first couple of seasons of Torchwood.
Who was kind of the main writer of Torchwood?
Chris Chibnall was writing a lot of Torchwood's episodes. And his stuff on Torchwood is better, but he's not a quippy dialogue guy. That's not his thing.
I actually think Torchwood is quite like Angel rather than Buffy.
Yeah, so it's Angel in the sense that... Yeah,
it's like serious.
It's and
like,
serious and it's like a procedural.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're like, you know, we're doing like a serious show and there's got a broody yeah. man. Yeah.
And Russell has said he used Angel as a model for Torchwood. Yeah. But there are two episodes of Torchwood that are copies of episodes of Buffy. And it is, there's one where Toshiko in Torchwood, she gets a, this, like, I think it's like a medallion or something where she can read everybody's minds.
Yeah.
And it, like, sends her crazy because she can suddenly hear what everyone's saying.
And Buffy has it in earshot.
And that's the, yeah, that's the,
although, to be fair, the exact same thing. Like, I don't know if Buffy can claim, surely they're not the first place to have, like,
done but the way that the story is told is almost really identical.
Yeah.
Also, there's.
That's a great episode of Buffy as well.
Yeah. And there's an episode of Torchwood called Adam.
Vaguely rings a bell. Is it in series 2?
It's in series 2. And it's there's a new guy in the Torchwood team called Adam.
Yeah.
But everyone is acting like he's always been there. And it turns out he's the villain. And that is basically the episode of Buffy where Jonathan...
Sorry, I thought you were going to say when Dawn...
Like, oh, Dawn, yeah. But there's the episode with Jonathan where he's...
He's like the hero.
He's the hero.
Which is great.
It's also a great episode. And kind of both those Torchwood episodes are sort of like... echoes of their Buffy counterparts, you know?
That's so interesting. I keep meaning to have like a proper Torchwood rewatch and I just always never get really around to it.
If you do it, don't bother with series 4.
I didn't even know there was a series 4. So isn't there just like specials then?
So it's series 1 and 2.
Yeah, then Children of Earth.
Then Children of Earth, and then there's another 10 episode thing called Miracle Day.
10 episodes?
10 episodes. It was an American co-production.
What the hell? I feel like this has made no pop culture
impact. It's fucking shit. It's so bad.
Who's even left? Is it just Gwen, Yanto and Jack?
No, Yanto's not in it anymore. Gwen and Jack.
Right.
And there were like some new characters from America.
Okay. Are they in America?
Oh, and Reese is still in it.
But
interestingly, so Russell was involved in that. I don't know what went wrong. And the other key writer on Miracle Day is Jane Espenson.
Oh.
Of Buffy the Vampire Slayer fame, who wrote, I don't know if you agree, but probably the best Buffy episodes that aren't Joss Whedon episodes.
I think that would be pretty fair. Yeah. I think she's also had a really good, like, eye for Buffy humor. I feel like she had a lot of good humorous episodes for sure.
She became like an exec for like the last few seasons, I think.
Yeah.
I'd like to see her write on Doctor Who. I think she was a bit wasted on Torchwood Miracle Day. Like,
that's random. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Actually, it does ring a bell a bit, but I don't I feel like Miracle Day has just completely passed me by.
It's so bad.
What is the plot?
Everybody becomes immortal, nobody can die.
Oh, I did hear about this, I think.
Just instantly. And it obviously causes like worldwide pandemonium.
Why did we never hear about this in Doctor Who?
Well, this is the other thing. It basically completely died. I remember someone pointing out, like, if you like make the timelines work, it's like during series 6 of Doctor Who. So like while Amy and Rory are just like knocking about in Ledworth, Miracle Day is meant to be happening.
And no one references it.
Because Torchwood pretty much from Children of Earth onwards kind of loses track from Doctor Who.
Yeah.
I think let's hand wave it away and say it's a different timeline.
Do anyone ever talk about it? Or like, does it ever get brought up?
Even when Jack came back in Doctor Who, he didn't bring up any of that.
And it was a big deal in Torchwood World.
Oh, huge deal. They spent 10 fucking episodes on it.
10 episodes is crazy. That's like
it's
a full...
mad. Honestly, I watched this in lockdown. So me and my friend Johnny, who you've met a couple times, we did... you know, we were both locked in our own houses and we did like watch-throughs of Doctor Who, like texting each other throughout.
Yeah.
And then we did all of Torchwood and we did Miracle Day. And honestly, it was like such a slog. It would get to lunch because we do it on our like work lunch break.
Mm.
It gets to lunchtime and be like, oh, we got to watch a fucking another Miracle Day. It was like torture.
What is it that makes it bad?
It's so Americanized in a shit way.
Is it procedurally?
It's not actually. It's more like an ongoing story. It takes itself really seriously. It's so unbelievably slow. Like, there's not enough story to stretch out over those 10 episodes.
Yeah, 10 episodes is a lot.
Yeah. Like, 10 episodes isn't a lot if every story is different.
Yeah.
But it's a long time.
It's a lot. Yeah. Like, this needs to be like the greatest story that I've ever heard if we're going to get like 10 full episodes.
It just has a completely different tone and doesn't really feel like Torchwood.
Yeah.
And it's a real whiplash from Children of Earth, which is one of the best things Russell T. Davies has ever written. It really Children of Earth is really the black sheep of Torchwood. Like, it's so unbelievably good.
Yeah, it is. I remember watching it. Didn't they air it like consecutive nights?
Yeah.
I remember watching it.
Five nights.
Yeah.
And Peter Capaldi's in it, and he's brilliant in it.
Yeah.
Which is cool. I mean, it's mad that Peter Capaldi was in that and Doctor Who and then got to be the Doctor.
Yeah, crazy. Yeah. I feel like they just like do that all the time. Just have to be okay with it.
Yeah, you just have to move on.
Fair.
But yeah, so Torchwood obviously took some stuff from Angel, some stuff from Buffy. Where do you think Doctor Who could learn other things from Buffy?
I think that it could... I mean, I tried to do it in the Chibnall and Whittaker era. I think what makes Buffy amazing is that, like, I really want to be around that group of characters no matter what they're doing. It doesn't matter if the episode is shit. It doesn't matter if the Monster of the Week is lacking. There's still always something in it that makes, like, the group dynamic makes me happy to be watching. Like, the way that the characters banter and stuff, especially later on, like, I love, like, Anya and stuff and those kind of... When they're in the magic box and they're, like, that dynamic to me is so good. And I think that I would love Doctor Who to do more of that kind of... I mean, they tried to do like TARDIS Farm and stuff, but like it wasn't right. Like, the writing wasn't good enough to do it. But I think in the future, I would love that more of kind of like I love when in like Journey's End, when they're all in the TARDIS, like that's I live for moments like that. And like, I wish they kind of could have a bigger team, I guess, in the future.
Yeah, I think the closest we've got to that that's worked for me, I don't know whether it would work for you, is the episodes in the early 2010s with 11th Doctor, Amy, Rory and River all together as a four. I think that works well, and that is, you know, the banter between them is good. And but yeah, it's not quite what you're describing with Buffy.
Well, I kind of think they nearly do it in Boomtown when they're like, you know, when they go
out, they do
that whole thing when they're like jumping through the, when they're like chasing her through the town.
That's
hall
so
thing.
True, yeah.
Like, that dynamic of like Mickey, Jack, Rose, and the Doctor.
That's like they're the Scoobies. Yeah, it's so true.
I'd love more. I love that episode, and yeah. I'd love more of that.
Yeah, it'd be cool to have like a group dynamic that.
Yeah.
Was a bit more, but then like I think because Doctor Who is a little bit more like you've got to do more setup every week.
Yeah,
it's a little more difficult.
And it's hard because also I think part of the charm is that it's like the two of them.
Yeah,
like it's weird because it's like something I would like to see. I do like when they do like what I was saying in Boomtown and stuff. But then like those kind of moments where like, you know, you're with the companion and they're seeing things, like you need to kind of almost feel that isolation with them because they're always your like way into the world.
Maybe it's that middle ground then of like, you know, when you get to know a companion's family, or like, you know, when we had the Paternoster gang for a bit, which I don't doubt that you despised. And you're looking at me blankly.
I don't remember them.
They were Madame Vastra and Jenny and Strax.
I didn't actually mind them.
Okay.
Much.
I thought you would.
I really hated Nardole culture though. That was how.
Why did you hate Nardole? Just because you hate Matt Lucas. Yeah. Yeah, fine. I'm not going to begrudge you hate Matt Lucas. Any other lessons you think they could learn?
I don't have anything to
kind of put you on the spot.
Yeah, you're putting me on the spot there.
I haven't had zero sleep.
It's hard because like I feel like Buffy was so long ago that it's like, I don't know. I feel like other lessons, I feel like they would have learned the lesson already.
Sure. There's the elephant in the room, which is a musical episode.
Wow.
So Buffy did Once More With Feeling.
Yeah.
It's kind of the pinnacle of the musical episode genre.
I think it was a pioneer.
Yeah.
One of the first.
It's maybe my favourite episode of Buffy.
Yeah,
I love it so much.
Definitely my most rewatched, or one that I can just come back to and like...
Love. Oh, I can put it on whenever.
Anytime, any place.
Yeah. And it's so good. But it's partly so good. It's not good because it's never been done before. That's not true. But it's like... It's so good that it's hard for anything else to come close when it does a musical episode.
Yeah.
I think this year, I mean, we obviously had the Goblin Song at Christmas.
Yeah.
I think we're getting a musical episode this year. I would like put good money on it.
What makes you think that?
Because there's been filming pictures of, like, I mean, there's, we know there's Beatles episodes, whether yeah. this is the same one. There's Beatles. There's, like, suggesting that we're going to have, like, Mozart in it at some point. And they've cast Jonathan Groff.
Yeah, I saw that.
Who is famously singing, a singer. Yeah. And they've cast Jinx Monsoon as a
oh,
villain.
Oh, yeah. And she's, like, piano-y on the thing.
She's got, like, a piano costume.
And she's,
on.
Like, musical theatre vocals.
Right.
Yeah.
And we had the singing in the Christmas ones. We know she's got what Emily Gibson can sing.
Yeah. Oh, I think that's a good theory.
Yeah, so
I'm actually not that excited for it.
Really?
I know that sounds really... I think it's because I hold the Buffy one with such
This
reference.
Is kind of what I meant,
And
yeah.
it's like, what do you... Like, where do we go from here? Because... Oh, not me literally quoting the song from the show.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Where do we go from here?
Oh, my God. Wow. But I think also, like... I mean, I hate to, like, blow so much smoke up Joss Whedon's ass because obviously, you know, everything that's gone on. But, like, the fact that he had never written music before and wrote all those songs...
Yeah, it's quite crazy. Well, his
insane.
Wife helped him. His
I
wife
know, but,
him.
Like, his ear for the like the musicalness
yeah,
of it is
mad.
So good. The
it's
genres, mad. The way it, like, references so many different musicals, so many
yeah,
different
it's
eras,
crazy.
And it's so high quality. And the fact that they all just, like, did that in, like, normal shooting schedules and had to take dance classes on top of it and, like,
yeah, it's literally
all that
crazy.
Kind of stuff. It's
yeah.
wild. And I love that it's... I mean, I'm just going on about it now, obviously, but, like, I love that it's, like, a gimmick, but, like, it's the most important episode of the series.
Oh,
like,
my God, and it really played... They really used the
Well, the thing is, you go sing your secrets.
Yeah, literally.
Like, wow.
Crazy.
So good, and just a brilliant piece of writing. I feel emotional sometimes talking about it because I just think it's so special. But, yeah, if Doctor Who did it, I'd just be on edge that they couldn't
pull it off. Yeah. What did you think of the Goblin Song?
It was a bit corny for me.
Corny,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah. But I think it's fine because it's Christmas.
Yeah,
and I think that's my logic for
he's
forgiving
the
a lot
Goblin
of
King.
Us.
He's the Goblin King.
I've been really put off.
He's
by
not
it.
A myth. He's an actual thing.
I really hate watching, like, cosplayers on TikTok doing it. It really makes me die. Like, I just can't watch it. Like, yeah. I don't want... Like, I don't know. They kind of take the fun out of it for me. But I think some of the lyrics are, like, stupid. But I guess it's fine because they're kind of, like, meant to look like they're making it up on the spot.
Sure. Russell T Davies wrote the lyrics, which is quite funny.
Yeah.
And Murray Gold wrote the music, which is funny because it sounds almost exactly like the one of the other songs Murray Gold wrote for Doctor Who, which is The Angel Put the Devil in Me. Do you remember that?
No.
It was in... Daleks of Manhattan, it's the song that Tallulah sings.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I didn't know that was an original song.
It's an original song. There's a few original songs in Doctor Who. There's that one. There's one called Love Don't Roam that's in Runaway Bride at the wedding. And there's one...
I just assumed these were real songs.
The best one is in Christmas Invasion. It's the one at the end where it's like, when I woke up today and the world is a restless place.
I think I just didn't know these were original.
Yeah, so he wrote that because they wanted to use, like, one of the Phil Spector Christmas songs.
Yeah.
And it was too expensive to get the rights, so Murray Gold just wrote his own.
That's nice.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So presumably he would write the music if there were a musical episode.
Yeah, is he always just down for it whenever?
I mean, he writes all the incidental music anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, yeah. I'm open-minded for sure, but like I said,
you don't
like...
look very open-minded. You look—you think... literally got your hand on your face, closing your mind.
I think I just want it to be—I don't know. Oh, I don't know. I just hope they pull it off if they do, because it's just such a bold thing.
It's a bold thing to do. I mean, Russell T Davies knows how to pull off a bold decision.
He does.
But
yeah, like I don't know. I think also, I think what's happened here is I like musicals less now. Like when Buffy, by the time I was really obsessing with Buffy, I was like, loved musicals. So I feel like it just came at the right time.
Yeah.
Whereas now I don't, I think musicals give me the ick a lot more.
Do
so,
they?
Yeah. Big time. Sorry guys, to any musicals fans listening, but it just.
Before I let you go.
Yeah.
Which stars of Buffy have also been in Doctor Who? I can think of only one.
Is the one Anthony has?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, I think they're probably it. That's probably it.
I mean, James Masters was in Torchwood.
Oh yeah. I guess they just unless why would there be like Americans really in?
That's
Dutch
true. Yeah, and there's not really any Brits in Buffy.
Apart from Anthony Head. Yeah.
Apart from Anthony Head. And James Marsters doing a British voice.
Yeah. To about James Marsters' British voice.
It's tricky because
it's weird because it suits the character so good. It's so
bad. It's really bad, but it's like consistent in how it's bad.
Yeah.
So you kind of just believe it as his voice.
Yeah.
And you can even explain it away by being like,
vampires have been around and
like he
hundreds of years old.
Hundreds of years old. So like maybe he's got like a bit of a transatlantic accent now. Yeah. I mean that's if you ignore the flashbacks where he's also doing that same voice. it's not as bad as fucking
Angel's Irish one.
Angel's Irish accent.
What are you doing there? It's so bad.
It's so
a
awful.
A lady like you in the alley.
I think it's weird that we're so okay with James Marsters' English accent, considering that Anthony Head is right there being actually English.
I think it really works because of the James Marsters character Spike being so like, he's just kind of a law unto himself, so it pulls off fine. Like, it all works for the character. It doesn't sound like a real UK accent, but like it suits Spike.
Yeah, for sure.
It makes it fine.
For sure.
And I think it's good that it's a bit different to Anthony Head, because, like, I mean, I think you need Giles to sound that kind of way.
Mm.
Like, you need him to have that really English, like.
For sure.
Although, thank God they soften it after a bit, because, like, the first episodes, it's all very, like, suits.
Oh, is he too, is he
He's
more
posh? He's tweed and tea, yeah. But, like, when it goes through, he gets cooler. Giles gets cooler, really, doesn't he?
He does, and hotter as well.
Yeah.
For sure.
I think they kind of let him cut loose a bit.
In Doctor Who, do we think they wasted him?
No.
No?
I think he's actually camp. I think it's really good.
He's great in it, but it's not that good an episode.
I really like it.
Do you?
I hate the chips bit of it all. It knocks me sick a bit.
Do try the chips.
Ew. It's so
cool. To be fair, that scene with Tennant and Anthony Head in the pool is cool.
I love his scream.
They had to ADR all of it because...
The echo.
The echo in the swimming pool room.
That's funny.
Also, guy hasn't aged a day.
Who?
Anthony Head.
No, he hasn't. He hasn't. You know, he does really well. He's in
he's Ted in Lasso. Random shit, isn't he?
Ted All Lasso. The, and he's like, in Motherland.
Yeah, he pops up in everything.
Yeah, he's booked and busy.
He's also the. He's also Will's dad in the Inbetweeners movie.
Yeah, I was gagged in the cinema.
Really random because he is out, as well. His daughter is in Inbetweeners, isn't she?
Yeah, I kind of hate his daughter.
Emily Head.
She does my head in.
She does your head in.
She does my head in, but...
Do you think it would be embarrassing she's an epic, maybe, if that I your don't like. Surname was Head? Because it's kind of like a sexual term.
I guess, yeah. Or it sounds like you're in charge.
Yeah. Would you feel embarrassed if you were called Head?
I don't know. Harry Head is a bit gross, or Harrison Head. Like, it's a bit... it's a bit novelty, isn't it?
So true. I mean, I've got an alliterative name.
True, but yours works.
So... When I was before I was born, when my because the reason I'm called this is that my mum is my parents were going to call me money before I was born. If I'd been a girl, but so my mum said, "Oh yeah, like if it's a girl, I'm going to call the baby Molly." And her sister was like, "What, Molly Marsh? Like a children's character? Like Molly Marsh goes to the shops. Molly Marsh goes to the farm." And my mum was like, "All right, fuck off." And so now I know that that's what my auntie thinks of my name.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Bet she's not said a word on that now.
Absolute crickets. Yeah.
Silence is deafening.
I think it sounds a bit like a Doctor Who companion name.
It does.
Like
it does.
I can imagine, like
I bet you love that
a pinafore dress girly.
Why is it always got pinafore dress girlies and like baby doll coquette vibes? Like, can we just grow up?
Do you hate the way I dress?
No. I don't. But you are wearing luminous purple Crocs.
What are
you? Look at you
what are you hating? What you're hating the purple Crocs, aren't you?
Do you want me to rank the bits?
Yeah, sure.
Jeans top, as in like the best.
Yeah, okay. Jeans are top.
Yeah.
Okay. Jeans are kind of just jeans though.
Yeah, but they just suit you.
Okay, thank you.
Then I go for the pink shirt.
Okay, cool.
Then I go for the striped shirt.
Okay.
Then I go for you. I don't know whether the socks or the shoes are worse.
The socks. The socks are just stripy socks.
They just look like they've been through the wars.
To be fair, I don't bother with socks like at with colours and
white. Yeah, fair.
Yeah. And then the Crocs are bad.
The Crocs are bad. I think it's because they're dirty as well.
What do you think of my quirky glasses?
I love them. I'm used to them on you.
Okay, cool. Okay.
I think they're very like They just really suit you. I think they're good.
Okay, thank you. I've finished asking for trouble now.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining me, Harrison. I'm going to let you leave now.
Thank you.
Because you look like death.
I do not.
You do look pretty fresh. It's just in your eyes. You're sort of dead behind the eyes.
Oh my God. I got we're not filming that. That would be so embarrassing.
I am going to ask you to take a photo in a minute.
Okay.
Is that all right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Where can people find your work? Have you got anything to plug?
Honestly, just...
This is a bit silly because you're way more famous than me, but...
just follow me on Twitter if you want to hear my opinions on Doctor Who and whatnot.
And Instagram for selfies?
Instagram for selfies, yeah. It's just Harrison J. Brock and everything if you want to stalk me.
And you can follow the podcast on Instagram at galacticyoyo_. You can follow me on Instagram at mollymartian_. And I will see you next week for another episode with another fantastic guest.